The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 4th, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my co-producer, my engineer, my webmaster, and loving partner, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Sonoma County. We've had a lot of rain, and I feel like the plants are singing. Anyway, happy Women's History Month. You know, March is a whole month of Women's History Month, and we begin this celebration. I have a special guest joining me on the phone this morning will be Molly Murphy McGregor, one of the co-founders of the National Women's Alliance. We will be talking about Women's History Alliance, which began as the Women's History Project, the origin and changes she has seen and concerns around women's equality and choice for women in 2024 and moving forward. And this year's theme is very interesting, Women Who Advocate for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. Women Who Advocate for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. What an amazing, amazing way to celebrate Women's History Month by bringing in all these different aspects of, like I said, equity, diversity, and inclusion. Well, let me give you a little bit of history here. In 1980, the National Women's History Project, NWHP, was founded here in Santa Rosa, California, by Molly Murphy McGregor, Mary Rustadter, Maria Cuevas, Paula Hammett, and Betty Morgan to broadcast women's historical achievements. The NWHP started by a leading coalition that successfully lobbied Congress to designate March as National Women's History Month, now celebrated across the land. Amazing, started right here in our own county. Well, today the NWHP, now the National Women's History Alliance, is known nationally as the only clearinghouse providing information and training for multicultural women's history, for educators, community organizations, and parents, and for anyone wanting to expand their understanding of women's contribution to United States history. And it's so interesting, you know, my claim to fame is that Molly McGregor and I both went to Sonoma State, and I remember we were walking to class one day, and she was telling me about a book that's coming out about women in art. And I looked at her, I said, "You mean there's really women artists?" And I mean, that's how little we knew about our own history. I mean, I had no idea of the impact that women have had on our country, and you know, even beyond the vote, especially the second wave of women's movement. And it was so interesting being at Sonoma State and learning all this stuff, and all of a sudden saying to myself, "Wow, women have accomplished that much." I mean, it was stunning to me. And now when we look at what women are doing, it's just amazing. We have a woman for vice president who's running again. We have many, many women in Congress and the Senate. I mean, all across the nation. I mean, when you turn on the television, you see many, many women doing newscasting and weather reports and all kinds of things that are happening. And also, you see a lot of women's lawyers. And right now, with all the rigmarole that's going on with the former president, how many women are actually the prosecutors, the ones who were handling this case? It is just overwhelming. When I grew up, and, you know, I was born in 1940. In fact, my birthday is going to be March 18th. I can't believe I'm going to be 84. That I was born in 1940, and that was during, you know, almost the offset of the World War II. At that time, it was very little known about women. You know, they very few women were in the military, that's for sure. They were either secretaries or nurses. And today we have them on the battlefield. Not that I agree with it, but I mean, it shows that women now have a place in society. They're not just going to the back of the bus or being silent. So I think that that's very, very interesting now. And you know, with all the elections going on and all the advertisements and all the brochures we get, you know, the whole thought I have of late is you have to follow the money. Before you make a decision, you get all these flyers. I mean, there's one person, I'm not going to name names here in Sonoma County, that's running. I cannot believe the amount of information I've gotten about this person or all the ads that are on TV. And all of a sudden I realize, hey, wait a minute, who's behind him? How much money is behind this person? So, you know, we have to consider that. In fact, I found a very, very interesting quote by W.E. Du Bois, who was an African-American activist and educator. And one of the things he said, we should, you know, we talk about prosperity. You know, what is prosperity? You know, we call ourselves the richest nation in the world. And we have to ask ourselves the following questions, you know, or even consider this, that we should measure the prosperity of a nation not by the number of millionaires, but by the absence of poverty, the prevalence of health, the efficiency of the public schools, and the number of people who can and do read worthwhile books. You know, and that was W.E. Du Bois that made that statement, that quote. But it's really interesting. We start looking at our school system right now. It's really in a lot of trouble. I mean, one of the things about having a strong democracy is you have to have an educated population. And as the schools diminish and less public schools, and who serves the public schools? I mean, it's great. I mean, if you have a lot of money and you can afford it, you can send your kid to a private school. But if you're just an ordinary working class person, you know, the public schools really served a great service for our young people. I mean, I remember when I went to school, I mean, I learned how to read, I learned how to write, I even learned how to do critical thinking. And when I got to high school, I mean, high school was kind of torture in a way, but at the same time, I was able to take business classes, I was able to get a part-time job, all kinds of things were happening. And it seems like right now things are being cut back to such a severity that how are our children going to get educated? And then you start looking at organizations like the Social Advocates for Youth here in Sonoma County, and they're shutting down. I mean, that was one of the best, one of the strongest programs for youth in our county, and here it is, no funding. You know, no funding. Well, where's all our money going? It's going into wars. It's going into things that really don't help the population, that really kind of depress us in a state. But, you know, there's a lot to think about and a lot of decisions to make. I mean, tomorrow we're all going to the polls to vote, and it's very important that we vote. I mean, our voice, that's our voice. The whole thing about a strong democracy is that we do have the right to vote, that we do choose the officers or the people that are going to lead us. And we have to really make some strong decisions and start thinking about what is going on, what are these people saying, and please pay attention to the judge races. Because this year we have many, many people running under that area, and you need to pay attention to who's running. Because judges, as we're seeing now, you know, with the whole issue around our former president, how much power the judicial system really has, how much power a judge has. I mean, a judge can make or break a case. I mean, it's very, very interesting. So it's so important that we pay attention and we vote. And voting is so easy. I mean, tonight, Ken and I are going to sit down. We're going to sit down at our kitchen table and we're going to talk. I mean, he influences me. He reads everything, every little thing. And really, we make a decision based on some of the facts that we get. And even that's hard to do because sometimes we're not getting all the facts. Sometimes we don't even know if the facts we're getting are true. But we can make an intelligent decision if we read, if we pay attention, and we really think about who we're voting for and what their platform is and what they are offering us. And at the same time, once they're in office, we have to hold them accountable. I mean, if we don't hold them accountable, they just run away and just do whatever they want. I mean, we see that now. I mean, most people are really concerned about our government because there feels like there's so much There's just so much going on and so much dishonesty and so much misinformation. So you really have to work hard to get the proper information and to make the vote. But the most important thing is voting. And one of the things that was brought to my attention from not only the League of Women Voters, but also from our own register of voters, is when you have that ballot, vote all the way down. You don't just vote for president. You have to vote for your assembly people, your senators. I mean, we've got some really hot races this year. So you have to vote all the way down the ballot, you know, not just the president. Oftentimes, what I heard is people just vote for the president and that's it. But no, it's the other people that are also very important, particularly people in our county. They make decisions for us. They decide if the water bill is going to go up. They decide if PG&E is going to be accountable. All these things, they decide whether certain programs are going to happen or not happen. So it's very important that we vote, that we look at the ballot, that we pay attention, and they, my God, they send us so much information. And my last comment on that is, watch who is sending you flyers, how much money they have, who's behind these people, and are they there to serve us, we the people, or are they there to serve themselves and all those that support them financially, if you know what I mean? I mean, it's a big decision. It's a really big decision. I remember the first time I voted. Actually, I had just gotten married. It was and President Kennedy was running, and I couldn't vote because I was only 20 at the time. But my husband, the man that I married, Richard Pine, he could vote, and I said, "Oh, you've got to vote for president. You've got to vote for John F. Kennedy. You know, we're going to have a young president." And I mean, it was very, very exciting. And I remember the first time I voted. I mean, it just felt so powerful to be in that little booth and just to mark those little boxes off and to say, this is who I want. And also, I remember the time when my grandmother came from Russia, and it took her 30 years to become a citizen until she finally voted. In fact, Ken has been doing Ancestor.com, and he's been looking up, and he happened to look up some of my family, and we actually found my grandmother's papers at where she was applying to be a citizen of the United States. And it took her 30 years, but I remember when she voted. I remember walking to the polls with her. I remember my family. We lived within 16 blocks of each other, actually 11 blocks of each other, and we all went to the polls, and there was Grandma, and I remember her going into the booth and coming out, and she was just so excited because she was an American and she could vote. So voting is very important. So I encourage everybody, get your butt out to the polls or fill out those mail-in ballots and get them in. And I really recommend, if you can, go to the voter registration. But there are several boxes around the county, and actually you can call the voter registration and they'll give you all that information. Well, I had a wonderful Zoom that I attended on Tuesday, February 27th, which was just amazing. The Zoom was put on by the Sonoma County, I believe it was the Sonoma County Office of Human Rights, Christine Lang from the NAAC, and Demetra Smith, who was also on the Human Rights Commission. They did a wonderful presentation about slavery here in Sonoma County. And you can find out more about it. In fact, it was a Zoom, and it was recorded. And if you go to, here's the, you get yourself a pencil. It's NAACP. SantaRosaSonomaCounty.org, and there's all the information. And also, if you go into SantaRetaCity.org itself, you actually can go into the Human Rights Commission, and I'm sure on their agenda they will have the recording.
No, Sonoma County website, not Santa Rosa.
Oh, it's Santa Rosa. It's Sonoma County website. Okay, well, everything, all the information that I'm giving you right now is going to be on www.womenspaces.com. So there's a lot you can do, a lot you can learn, and I found, you know, it was just listening to Demetra Smith and Kirsten Lang from the NAAC presenting their partnership with Sonoma State, from talking about Sonoma County slavery and what happened, was really interesting to learn. We learned an awful lot, particularly the way what was happening during the Civil War and how people were coming to California with their slaves and all the different issues that happened. It's a fascinating fascinating, fascinating presentation. Well, like we do every Monday, we do our history is our strength. And boy, there's been a lot of history made in March. I mean, this is International Women's History Month. I mean, well, National Women's History Month. All across the United States, there's all kinds of celebrations. And I'm really excited that Molly Murphy McGregor is going to be on, and she's going to give us some insight and about the how the Alliance itself started and what are some of the things that they're doing and also some of the events that are happening during this month. Well, let me give you a few dates that I think are very, very interesting. March 1st, 1978, which is Women's History Week, is observed in Sonoma County, California. And that's a, now we're into the History Week, then we go into the History Month. And then March 1st, also in 1987, Congress passed a resolution designating March as Women's History Month. So we go in from 1978, it was Women's History Week, then it goes into 1987, it goes into History Month. And then we have the underlying history that actually created this. And on March 3rd, 1913, which I thought was really, this was, I mean, when you really go into the history of this, it's amazing what women did. And March 3rd, 1913, it was the Women's Suffrage Parade in Washington, D.C. There were 8,000 women gathered to demand constitutional amendment guaranteeing the right to vote across the nation, because many states already had the right to vote, but they wanted it all at that time was 48 states, all 48 states to, for women to be able to vote. So it's very, very important, especially women. I mean, you know, it's interesting when people complain or they, you know, they talk about this and they talk about that. The government's not doing this. I ask them, did you vote? If they say no, I don't even want to hear them, because that's the least we can do. In a democracy, the most important thing you can do is to vote. And then, of course, here we go on March 8th, which is International Women's Day. That's going to be on Friday, and whose origins trace back to the protests in the United States and Europe to honor and fight for the political rights for working women, the political rights for working women. In other words, we had the right to be safe in the factory, to have a decent wage, and to not have to work 16, 18 hours a day with no breaks. I mean, can you believe that women had to go to factories and they worked anywhere from 14, 16 to 18 hours a day with no breaks? Oh, my God, when you think about it, you know, when we look at the way the world is structured today compared to it was back there, we've come a long way, ladies. But we still have a long way to go, and as we see, little by little, we're losing our rights. We're losing our right to choose. I mean, that is amazing. I cannot believe. I'm going to tell you something that really blew me away. I could not believe during this election cycle that the former president is running, and he was bragging about the fact that he put people in the court so we would get rid of Roe versus Wade. Our right to choose, our right to some sort of independence, and he's bragging that he took that away. I mean, please. You know, you really have to think about that for a moment. Well, we got some good birthdays going on, and that's on March 4th. That's today, actually. Jeanette Rankin, she was a Republican from Montana. She took her seat as the first female member of Congress. And it's so interesting. When I do research on this, I thought, wow, that was 3 years before we got the vote nationally, but this woman was able to become a member of Congress. So lots of different things. In fact, I'm going to ask Molly when we get on, how was that possible? And one of the things that I like about our theme this year, women who advocate for equity, diversity, and inclusion. Well, that's kind of the goal of women's spaces, is to bring women of all persuasions on, you know, white women, black women, Republican, you know, Democrat, you name it, you know, Green Party. We try to have as many, you know, Asian women, all the different diverse. And one of the group of women I really became aware of when I was at Sonoma State in 1973, when I first came and I found out all about women's studies, and I started finding out the history of women. all of a sudden I realized our lesbian sisters were really left out. You know, they really felt, they really had a struggle to get their voice heard and to get it placed on the table. And one of the women who was very, very active in that, and she was born March 4th, which is today, 1948, and she made her transition in 2005, was Jean O'Leary. She was a lesbian and gay rights activist. She was the founder of the Lesbian Feminist Liberation, one of the first lesbian activist groups in the women's movement, was an early member and co-director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, and she co-founded National Coming Out Day. I didn't even know they had a National Coming Out Day till I looked at her birthday, and I looked up, I said, what's the National Coming Out Day? I mean, it's really, and so I'm going to read you something. This is what the National Coming Out Day, it's called NCOD. It's an annual LGBT Awareness Day. It's observed on October 11th to support anyone coming out of the closet. It was first celebrated in the United States in 1988. The initial idea was grounded in the feminist and gay liberation spirit of the personal being political, and the emphasis on the most basic form of activism being coming out to family, friends, and colleagues, and living a life and as openly a lesbian or gay person. The founders believe that homophobia thrives in an atmosphere of silence and ignorance, and that once people know that they are loved ones who are lesbians or gay, they are less likely to maintain homophobic or oppressive views. So what National Coming Out Day is to say, it's safe. It's safe for you to declare who you are, and maybe once your family knows, once your friends know, there's an opportunity for more and more acceptance. In other words, the idea is, let's not be ashamed anymore who we are. You know, my feeling is, I think about this a lot. I really do. And I think there should just be one rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the only negative is when you do harm. You know, how you live your life is none of my business, as long as you're not forcing your ideas on me or you're harming me. I mean, we need to support one another. I mean, that's the idea. That's what freedom is all about. Free to be you, free to be me, and not to be afraid of each other. That we can be friends whether we have different lifestyles or not. We can be family and still be friends and have this and different lifestyles, as long as we're not harming one another. And I have never met a gay person, really, in my lifetime that ever wanted to do any harm to me, or an African-American person, or an Asian person, or a Jewish person. I mean, how we judge one another is really sad. But that's how I judge. I just, don't harm me. And don't gossip about me. Because once you start, if you're going to gossip about me, I don't trust you, because then I believe you're gossiping about everybody and his brother. But the most important thing is not to do harm to one another. And to recognize our children are the future. And we must never forget that. Children live what they learn. When you have children, like right now we have children in these war zones. In 2012, when I was on a television, I did a show with my friend Therese, who is part of the Palestinian movement here in Sonoma County. And it was an art show that I brought on from the Children of Gaza. And they wanted to stop it, and I decided, no, they're not going to stop it. I'm going to put it on my television show. But one of the things that I began to recognize, number one, I thought, all these children in these war zones, you know, children live what they learn. What kind of hate do they have? What kind of fear do they have? What kind of mistrust do they have? Especially here in the United States, when we're supporting a lot of these wars, how do they feel about us? You know, it's an interesting question to ask. And when I saw the art show and I saw the expression of children, I said to myself, you know, there but for fortune go you or I. If one country is going to be destroyed or another country is going to be destroyed, what's going to stop them from maybe one day coming over and trying to destroy us? That's why peace is so important. Justice and peace should be the number one priority that we have right now. And hopefully it will happen. So there's a lot to think about. And like I said, this is Women's History Month, and I thought we would take a musical break. And, of course, I'm going to have to play the song I Am Woman by Helen Reddy. I remember when we first I remember when that song first came out, and all of us were just singing it. We were singing it in classes. We were singing it in choruses. It was an amazing thing. I am woman, hear me roar. In other words, I am woman, and I now have a voice. I am now demanding equality. Well, we did it, but we still don't have an Equal Rights Amendment, but that's kind of interesting. That's a conversation all by itself. But it was just amazing. And here I was at Sonoma State as part of the women's movement and hearing all these different women, all the contributions they made, all the struggles they made. The whole suffrage movement was just amazing. I mean, women put their lives on the line. They went to jails. They were waterboarded. You know, they wanted women to be silent, you know, go back in the kitchen, you know, your husband is the boss, not you. I mean, amazing what we have gone through to come to this place where here we are in 2024, right here in Sonoma County, because of the women who got together and stood up and said, no, we want a Women's History Month. And here we are. And also, here we are, probably one of the most important votes that we're going to be making in this election and also the election in November. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to play I Am Woman, and we're going to do it, the song by Helen Reddy. She actually wrote the song and sang the song in celebration of Women's History Month 2024. This song became an anthem for the second wave of the women's movement. Actually, that's what got me on the radio. Was I was a woman in 1977. They brought me on because they wanted a English-speaking a Caucasian woman to introduce women's music to the women in Sonoma County. And that's how I got on the radio. I mean, but I've come a long way since then. But it was a very interesting thing. Even a woman, as a woman, all of a sudden I'm going to be on the radio? I mean, there were not that many women on the radio when I first went on the radio. It was like a phenomena. You know, a woman on the radio. It was very, very exciting. When we return, I will be talking on the phone with Molly Murphy McGregor, one of the co-founders of the National Women's History Project. She's also the executive director and has done an absolutely marvelous job. And I understand that she might be stepping down and doing other things. I'm really excited about talking to her about that. It was originally called the Women's History Project. Now it's called the National Women's History Alliance. And we're going to find out exactly why they've changed the names. And we're also going to talk about, we're going to try to kind of do a State of the Union about where are women today? What's happening? How are they doing? So let's go ahead, Ken, let's go ahead and play I Am Women by Helen Reddy, and we will get Molly Murphy McGregor on the phone and listen to the song, you know, let it go in. Just think of us at the beginning of the women's movement here in Sonoma County and listening to this song and all the things that were happening. Amazing. So let's go ahead, Ken, let's play that and let's get Molly on the phone.
I'm invincible.
so proud to be a woman. You know, it's interesting. In the Old Testament, there's actually a prayer. Thank God I wasn't born a woman. Well, I'm going to say, thank the goddess that I was born a woman. For you folks just joining in, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, the board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest joining me on the phone, Molly Murphy McGregor, one of the co-founders of the National Women's History Project and Alliance, now called the Alliance, and one of the main pushes for Women's History Month. Well, welcome, Molly. Welcome once again to your annual Women's History Month interview.
Oh, thank you, Elaine. Thank you. I'm kind of a little bit Lauren Bacall this morning, but, you know.
Oh, that's okay.
You'll be able to understand me.
Well, you know, normally I introduce you and give me your whole bio. You know, this is about the fifth year you've been on. So why don't we just start, just talk a little bit about yourself. What got you interested in women's studies to begin with? I mean, I know you were a high school teacher. And what was the process that you went through to bring this wonderful, wonderful month forward for all of us?
Well, my life, it wasn't supposed to be like this. I'm, as you know, well, you might not know, I'm the youngest of nine children, and I grew up in a white working class bubble where my parents never mentioned college, neither did any of my brothers and sisters. None of them considered it. It was lucky that they had graduated from elementary school. So my goal in life was to fall in love and have the man of my dreams take care of me for the rest of my life and have lots of children. So that was my goal. I was a good student in Catholic grammar school, but in high school I had a lot of fun. And as soon as I got out of high school, I decided I would, you know, I was just waiting around for this man to make my life, you know, wonderful and meaningful and stuff. And in the process, I was working at the Bank of America, and with all these old people, they were in their 30s and they had children. They talked about their families. There was only one other young person there. He was 18, and we took a banking class together. And on the way home from the banking class, he said to me, "Molly, how do you live on whatever the salary was?" And I said, I don't make that much money. That's 25% more than I make." He said, "Oh, yeah, that's what we get paid." And I said, "But, Ed, we do the same work." And he said, "I know, but that's what we get paid." So the next day, I went into the bank and joyfully talked to the bank manager, because dollar signs were dancing in my head of how much money I thought these folks owed me. And the short of the story is he told me Ed was receiving that money because Ed was on a training program. And when I encouraged him to put me on that same training program, not that I wanted it, but I wanted the money, he walked me over to one of those big brown banker desks and said, "Molly, do you think people want to walk into a bank and see women in positions of authority?"
Oh, my God.
And at the time, I didn't even really know words like misogyny or condescension or whatever. But I knew what it meant to be un-American, and I knew what it meant to be stupid. And because my whole education said that it was supposed to be about equal opportunity. Anyway, needless to say, I quit my job. And thank God for the community college system. I was able to enroll in community college and really had the best professors in the world. It made me, it just burst my whole white working class bubble. I knew nothing about the world, nothing. And all of a sudden, all this new information is coming at me. Anyway, I decided that the most important thing then was education, and I was going to be a teacher. And I took the extra year to be a teacher, and I was lucky enough to be hired at a high school in Southern California. And I wanted these kids to think, not like think like me. I just wanted them to think. I wanted them to appreciate how important knowledge and facts and things are, and then they can take them and grow them and do whatever they need to do with them. But my second year of teaching, a young man said to me, "Mrs. Obar," because I was married at the time, "Mrs. Obar, what is the woman's movement?" Now, this was 1972. It was a banner year in the women's rights movement, right? Shirley Chisholm ran for president of the United States. Barbara Jordan was elected to the Congress. Title IX started to be written, and Ms. Magazine was published. And I was a second-year teacher, and I think you know teachers need to know everything, especially young teachers. So I looked at this man with as much intelligence as I possibly could, and said to him, "What a good question. Let's divide into groups and look at that question." And I immediately divided the class into groups around what does the family say about the women's movement? How about government? How about religion? And finally, historically, what would we say? And that was my, as we say, click moment. I went home to my sacred shrine of history books. One book, one chapter was all on Seneca Falls and the first women's rights conference in Seneca Falls. I highlighted it all in yellow. I knew for sure that I received an A. I received straight A's in history. And the thing that was missing was I had not even begun to connect the fact that I was a married woman teaching high school, wearing slacks to school, had everything to do with the pioneering work of these women. And then immediately I thought about my mother and all the questions I'd never asked my mother that I just assumed because she was my mother, she did the miraculous things that she did. So that sent me up to Sonoma State to go to graduate school, and thank God, women's studies. And I joined a task force that was our education task force. And I also worked for the state of California. And when I asked kids to name, you know, five men in American history, they didn't seem to have any problems. But when I asked them to name five women after Mrs. Washington and Mrs. Lincoln, they were stuck. Anyway, knowing what a problem this was, we went to the county school administrators. And there were about 30 of them from all the different districts and stuff. And they were all male. And there was one woman who was a dean, Evelyn Truman from Montgomery High School. And then there were three of us from the commission. And at the time, you know, people were afraid of the women's movement. They were afraid that, I don't know, that we had protracted teeth and wanted to chew children or kill me.
Well, the whole thing.
I don't know.
The whole thing.
Stupid ideas.
The whole thing around.
Had, right.
The whole thing around women. I mean, the whole thing, we had the lesbian movement at that time. We had the women's movement. We had, you know, all kinds of things going on. And, you know, it's very interesting what you start at the beginning. I can totally relate. I mean, that was my whole inspiration was, oh, I was supposed to get married. In fact, I was my mother's most beautiful daughter. So I was supposed to marry a doctor, you know, and I certainly let them down all the way. But, you know, it was very interesting when I went to Sonoma State. In fact, I want to do a shout out right now for J.J. Wilson and for Ann Neal.
No kidding.
I mean, they were so influenced. If you're listening, Ann, I mean, my God, it lives in my heart. I mean, my word. And all the things that went on. And then after, I remember walking into class with you when we were talking about the art, with women in art. And I remember saying to you, really, Molly? Is there women artists? And you go, yeah, I think so.
It's J.J. I mean, she really did start that revolution. She and Karen Peterson wrote the first book on women artists because when they were studying women philosophers, and Karen said to JJ, "Well, there's this many women philosophers. How about women artists?" Well, at that time, in order for them to seek out women artists, they had to use footnotes because women were so. I mean, if you look at that great big Janssen book of art, there weren't any women in it. So it was it was a different time, and people were kind of afraid of the women's movement. And we were concerned that these administrators might think we were outside agitators, because, of course, we were outside agitators. But I wore a dress and all of that. They didn't even hesitate to take on the idea of putting a Women's History Week on the school calendar. We said we wanted it to be the week of March 8th because that was International Women's Day, and women throughout the world had already been celebrating that day. And if we put a week on the school calendar, it would give teachers motivation, reason. I mean, teachers can only teach what they know. And if they don't know anything about women, or they don't even know that they're supposed to, it's a hard ride. So that was the beginning. We had two very successful Women's History Week in this county. I took the idea to a national conference as big shots there that even knew President Carter and all of that. And in July of 1979, I took the idea to them and told them all the benefits that could accrue from it. And by February of that year, just those months later, I was working at the commission, and I received a phone call, and I answered the phone, and they said, "Oh, this is the White House calling for Molly McGregor."
Oh boy!
And I said, "One moment, please." And I put the phone on hold and took a deep breath. You know, it wasn't a normal occurrence in my life. Anyway, as it turned out, it was Sarah Weddington, the woman who argued for Roe v. Wade, who was now one of the special assistants to the president. And the president issued that year, 1980, a special presidential message to the American people to pause and remember American women during National Women's History Week. And Barbara Mikulski, who was in the House of Representatives and the woman and the liberal, and Orrin Hatch in the Senate, who was conservative and male, they picked it up for the next year. And for the next 7 years, we kept lobbying to make sure we had a Women's History Week. But it became problematic because there was Easter, there was Passover, there were things. And so in 1987, we were finally able to get them to proclaim National Women's History March as National Women's History Month.
Wonderful. And you know what's so interesting? March is my birthday, so I love it, March 18th. I love, you know, Women's History Month, and I always say it's my birthday also. And, you know, what an amazing job you've done. I mean, really. So let's come up to 2024, you know, this year's theme. I just love this theme, Women Who Advocate for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. Talk about what inspired that theme, and why do you think it's important today, and what do you think is happening with women today?
Well, you know, one of the real motivations for that theme is the kind of lies and distortions that are being made about equity. The backlash that we didn't suffer 40 years ago. 40 years ago, people just didn't know anything, you know. Now they make up lies. Now they, you know, this is about special privilege. This is about special this. So we wanted to really put forth the idea of the benefits of the lives that are changed because of the work that people do to be inclusive, to recognize diversity, and to be equitable in what they're doing. I hope you have our magazine. You do, don't you?
Oh,
you
definitely.
Our magazine.
Oh, yes, wonderful. Okay. I have an ad in it. I'm one of the partners.
Well, yes. So you'll see in the center of it, what we really focused on was advocacy. These are there's 12 of them or something, but those are just the things that have come from people putting their heart and soul and feelings into knowing that things could be better, that things could be different, and that the way they become different is by having things be inclusive. The way they become different is by having things be diverse because of how much more learning you get with diversity. And then finally, in terms of being equitable, we need to give everybody a fair chance. I gave a speech yesterday at the Saturday Women's Club, and I said something that I wished I hadn't said, and since that time I wrote them a note and asked them to send it out to my retraction to the whole group, because this is what I said. Someone said to me, "How about these male groups who are so anti-woman? What about them?" Well, and I sloppily and without really thinking it through said, "They're stupid." And now what I want to remind people is that it's not their stupidity, although I'm not denying that that might exist, but it's the fact that from childhood, from families, from religious orientations, from communities, from countries, men have been reinforced with the idea that they're supposed to be the talkers, they're supposed to be the doers, they're supposed to be the leaders. And so I just want us to keep remembering that we're up against thousands of years of patriarchy. And so what we need to do as we promote the women's history movement, as we promote women, as we encourage people to respect women, is that instead of me dismissing these men as being stupid, I needed to say, when a man says something like, well, women are only good for such and such or such and such, what you need to do is ask him why he would say that. Because I think if we would start giving each other some space to think about the stupid things we sometimes say, racist, sexist, homophobic things, the world would change. I mean, otherwise people feel that they're on the spot. They have to become defensive. I'm not saying they're going to change, but I'm saying that a seed has been planted. If we ask the question and we listen to their answers, that would have been a much more appropriate thing for me to say yesterday than just to dismiss them as stupid. Dismissing anybody for anything is a mistake, because we have to, especially the world we live in now. I mean, my God,
did
we ever think?
When it comes to, you know, men and women, I mean, we're all trapped in some sort of position that we can't really move forward, and equality just goes out the door. And I think what you're saying is to have a discussion and to get to know one another, to get to understand where each one of us is coming from, and maybe we can come together. I mean, and we are coming together. I mean, there are many, many, many men that support the movement, and there's many that don't, you know, and so we have to look at all aspects of it. Well, you know, time goes by very fast here, and I can't believe that, you know, I wish I had 5 hours. I was going to play a song by Sandy Rapp, Remember November, and just to remind people, we don't have time for that, but just to remind them to go ahead and vote, and what the song talks about of what it was like when women did not have rights and were losing those rights. And so what I thought we would do for today's show is not only talk about the, you know, Women's History Month, but also to kind of give... I want your opinion on what is the State of Union. I mean, one of the things that was so disturbing, and I talked about it at the beginning of the show, was I heard the other night that our former president was actually bragging that he put enough people on the Supreme Court so we would get rid of Roe versus Wade. And he also was bragging about that they did not make any changes about common sense gun laws. So, this bragging about things that are putting ourselves and our children and the future in danger. And I thought, give us an idea of where you feel women are today, and what are some of the things that we need to do? I mean, along with standing up and letting our voices be heard.
Well, that's it too, standing up and letting our voices be heard. But they need to be heard in a way where people can hear them. You know, if we're yelling at people, they don't hear us. But we live in such a different world. Look at the numbers of women who have mobilized, the Me Too movement, the domestic violence movement. I mean, around the world, the work that women are doing. And what I can say is what we need to do is more of it. We need to embrace each other. Women have real differences with each other. And we need not to come to, you know, an agreement that this is the way, but to always come to an agreement that we will respect the other person's perspective. And I think that what we've lost more in this world, and I'll just call it, since the Trump administration, we've lost no sense of shame. We've lost no sense of things just being, I know the word nice is, it sounds like such a, you know, a meaningless word, but just being decent and respectful to each other. I think we have a huge amount of work to do. But the wonderful, wonderful thing is we have this whole generation, three of them at least, generations of kids, of obviously, I'm old saying kids, but of people who have skill sets, who have mindsets, who are coalescing, who do have a better idea that the world should be more just than it is. So my, you know, I am always, always trying to be intergenerational in every way I can. I learn so many new things every day from young people, and I'm astonished. I'm astonished that I'd never thought about it that way. So I don't know what any one answer is, but I do know the answer is we need to be together. One of the things that we've been thinking about, and some groups have started doing this around the country, is instead of Women's History Marches as we've had, you know, in the past and stuff, to have Women's History or just straight out women's festivals that are totally intergenerational, that are planned by the millennials or Gen X as well as us, as a way to celebrate being together. That you know, kids feel judged all the time. They feel like, oh yeah, you're not going to listen to me. And if anything, we need to listen. We really need to listen, and not listen in the ways that I'm going to hear what this person says because I know what I can say in response, but listen in a way that opens us up as we haven't been before. We haven't, it's been my experience that people have not paid attention to what other people were saying. They dismissed it. They thought, instead of saying, well, why would you say that? Or what makes you think that? Or what did you read? Or, you know, what was the author's background? You know, really inquire about each other's lives and each other's perspectives as a way to move forward. But we have to do it together. You know, people pick on Biden all the time. I am glad Biden's as old as he is. He knows more than, of course, I will ever know about foreign policy, about how you get things done, how you are diplomatic. Power, yeah. Like this bombastic Trump's power, that's not the way we move things forward. So that I guess I don't have an answer other than we need to learn to listen to each other and respect each other. And if we need to disagree, we need to disagree with respect.
And I want to add something also. We also need to look at our history, because our history tells us what we have and have not had. It gives us a sense of what the struggle is all about and the shoulders that we're standing on. And, you know, I think to myself, too, when I look at the women's movement, it is actually, when you look at the word diversity, it has become much more diverse. I mean, I'm a member of the National Organization for Women. And, you know, at one time, there was no really support for women of color. And now today, you have many, many women of color in positions of power, which is so important. And all of that grew out of the women's movement, women coming together and saying enough is enough. We have a right to have a seat at the table. So I think it's very, very important. So I'm glad you share that. And I also believe that we, you know, there's a song by Ellen Burstyn that I really love. It's called "By My Silence, I Give My Consent." And to be quiet, you know, and not to vote, all those things, you're saying, hey, it's okay. You know, when you don't vote, you're saying, yeah, no matter what they do, it's okay with me. Well, it's not okay with me. That's why it's important that we do that. Well, we're coming to the end of our segment, and one of the things I'd like to have you address, anything that's going on in our county that you need us to know, across the nation that you need us to know, and how they can get a hold of that magazine. The magazine is so profound. You know, I'm so grateful. I actually put a little blurb in there for Women's Spaces, and when I looked at the magazine, I said, oh my God, this is just absolutely fabulous. So give us a little information.
It's definitely our very best. I mean, it's my last magazine as editor, because, you know, I officially retired in December 31st. I will be the helper. I'm continuing as staff. But I needed to step down for new generations to step forward. And they are. Our board of directors is just amazing. But tell people if they want a copy of the magazine, I will be glad to send them one free if they just email me. And my email is N is in national, W is in women, H is in history, P is in project, 1980 at gmail. And also, if they have extra time in their hands, there's always things we need help with here, in whether it's following up on research or Sonoma State is going to take all of our archives And we're talking about 300 boxes of archives that we're working through to hone them down so that, you know, that they're comparable. So, people email me, and I will be glad to send them our magazine, and I will be glad to tell them how they can join us, and because it's only together. And you talk about what we've accomplished.
Molly, the clock has run out, my friend. I have to cut you off.
Bye.
No, stay on the phone. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. I've had the honor today of interviewing Molly Murphy McGregor, one of the co-founders of the Women's History Project right here in Sonoma County. I want to remind women that this month is Women's History Month. To be really aware of that, pay attention. I will find as much as I can if you go on www.womenspaces.com, any events that are going on. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. And like I say at the end of the show, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that.
And a woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 4th, 2024.